the sudden slew of racist attacks against Asians. I mean, that was deeply disturbing. And instances that I even experienced, I think the first couple of weeks, I was yelled COVID, I was yelled chink. It happened to me. And obviously, it's founded in ignorance and stupidity. It's driven by hatred, misplaced hatred. And for me, I really don't think there's any room for it. I also know that in our country, we have a lot of issues with race. We have a lot of issues with groups that have been oppressed, murdered, abused for as long as our country's history. And at the same time, we then have these events that cause kind of this like spurt in just more ignorance. I don't really know how to use my platform to be angry or aggressive if I'm just honestly just deeply saddened by it.
That was award-winning Asian American writer, actress, and comedian Awkwafina talking candidly about the concerning state of xenophobia and the slew of racist attacks against Asians in the aftermath of COVID. Hi there, I'm Celeste Headlee. Welcome to Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. This podcast brings you conversations with some of the most brilliant minds, offering invaluable advice and some inspiration that might help you navigate life in both your career and at home. Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month takes place every May. We recognize the important contributions these communities have on the history, culture, and achievements of the United States in May. And we're so excited for today's episode, recognizing two remarkable pioneers blazing trails for Asian Americans and inspiring women and girls of all ages and backgrounds. Awkwafina, aka Nora Lum, and Lisa Ling, the executive producer and host of CNN's This Is Life. This episode is a replay of an extraordinary keynote conversation from the 2020 Massachusetts Conference for Women. Nora Lum talks about her personal experiences in navigating the ups and downs of her career and life. With honesty and vulnerability, she illustrates that everyone, regardless of their level of success, grapples with insecurities and self-doubt. This conversation is packed with advice and some laughter, and we hope you'll walk away feeling motivated and ready to tackle your fears and take a risk. I'm so excited to sit back and listen with all of you. So let's get started.
Hello, everyone, at the Massachusetts Conference for Women. I am so excited to be talking to Awkwafina, whose career I have just been in awe of from the day that I became aware of her. You started your media career as a rapper, and that's how the name Awkwafina came about. I wonder if you could tell everyone kind of what launched your acting career. And people also might not know that your real name is Nora.
Yeah, my parents didn't name me Awkwafina, much to the surprise of a lot of people. Yeah.
But kind of how Nora became Awkwafina. So what launched the acting career and how did Nora become Awkwafina? And where is Nora now?
Wow. I always noticed things when I was young. I loved making people laugh. That was my main prerogative. I would do anything. I would jump off of a balcony to make someone laugh. I would do anything. And that was a big thing that made a lot of sense to me. And then I loved writing. I loved music. I loved everything from classical to hip hop to Latin folk, everything. And I noticed that there was always this interconnection between everything, the books that I read, the indie movies that I was moved by and wanting to entertain. And I think that all of those things played a factor in where I am and where I became. When I was 15, 16 years old, I came up with the name Awkwafina, not ever imagining that it would be a known thing or that people would call me that. But also when I was 15 or 16, I had a kind of a shamelessness, a confidence, and a bravery that I don't have anymore. And I think a lot of it was disciplined away and just kind of becoming an adult. But the person that I was when I thought of that name was someone that was a dreamer, that was put in a situation where her life circumstances seemed pretty bleak, but she dreamed all the time. And that Awkwafina didn't care as much as Nora. And so when it became kind of this moniker for my career now, there is always talk of this kind of duality with it, where it's like, they're two different people. And I think if you say that enough, you kind of ignore the reality that they are the same person. Awkwafina is a part of me. And when I see that name on chair backs, on movie posters, I am reminded of that girl that I was when I was young. So where Nora is now, I've always said that Awkwafina induces the panic attacks and then Nora goes through them. But I think now, as I'm entering my 30s, I need to find more of a connection between the two.
Would you say that Awkwafina has really helped Nora a lot? And where is Nora today?
Nora today is still kind of caked with imposter syndrome, overwhelming insecurities, anxieties, worries, fears, the feeling of inadequacy, always. I talk about this sometimes and it makes me obviously seem like an asshole, but the years when I was struggling, when I was making $15,000 on a good year, working at a bodega, playing little shows, those are the best days of my life because I was waiting for something to happen. And it was ironic for me because when things started to pick up and it was objectively the best time of my life, I found myself losing a sense of identity, who I was, losing myself. And so Nora today is someone who is trying to realize what happened over all those years that I think I missed out. I want to try to be in a mental place where I can handle this career in a healthy way and I'm not worrying all the time.
I so appreciate you being that vulnerable about that. Can you talk about the ways in which you are trying to kind of combat that insecurity? I mean, I think insecurity is something that we all feel, right? And so are there ways that you've figured out to try and deal with that? Or have you found ways to help you through and overcome some of those insecurities?
I have. It was actually very recent. I read a book that actually changed my life. If I tell you what it is, you've probably heard of it. It's called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, and it's by Mark Manson. And I'm not into self-help. I'm not into that. But what the book taught me, it taught me two things. One, that your greatest love will always be the source of your greatest pain, your greatest tragedy, your greatest fears, because it's your greatest love. The second thing it taught me is that when we define ourselves as undiscovered geniuses, rising stars, the next, if you define yourself as that, you set yourself up for a constant row of disappointments. Instead, define yourself more broadly. I'm an actress. I'm a musician. I'm an entertainer. And once I realized that life will always be about suffering, life will always be about problems. One thing that's a problem for me is that I have a problem where I want everyone to like me. I don't want people to hate me. I want people to like me so badly that it's unrealistic. Because as they say, when you become the president, you lose half the country. For me, instead of making my value, I need everyone to love me or something that I can't control, I can instead say, I want to put out kind energy. I want to treat people with kindness and respect. I don't want to be someone who people don't like. That's what I can control. So I'm still learning. Yeah.
Does it make you nervous or how does it make you feel when people describe you as this A-list actress, right? Who has worked alongside some of the biggest names in Hollywood, Golden Globe award winning among so many of the accolades. How does that feel? Does it feel deserving to you?
Deserving, I don't know if that's the word. Unplanned, yeah. And I think the first couple of years that I started doing this, beginning with my first two big movies, Ocean's 8 and Crazy Rich Asians, it always kind of felt like an acid trip. Sometimes I wake up and I don't know if it was a dream. My whole life was a dream. With the Golden Globe, though, it was so unexpected. And that movie meant a lot to me. When I think about Billy, I think about my grandma. And so to see a film like that written and directed by an Asian American woman, to get that kind of recognition for a story that I felt that no one could understand, that made me feel good. I don't see it as like, oh, well, I'm done. That happened. I mean, it was the most memorable night probably of my life, but I'm still hungry for more. And I don't by any means think I'm an A-list actress. I think that you can be an A-list actress for a week and then it's arbitrary. So I'm just waiting for it to even itself out.
Well, that role in The Farewell, I just thought was incredible. And it was just so different from how the world has seen you, right, over the past couple of years. So I imagine that it just must have been so validating as an actress to be awarded for a role like that. you talk about the fact that it was an Asian American director and writer. You are Chinese Korean, like my two daughters.
Yeah. Yes. We need more of us.
Yes.
To understand the really complicated inner working relationships of the two cultures. Yes.
Exactly. Right. But I wonder, as an Asian American, has it hurt you or helped you in the business? And if so, in what ways?
I'm different from a lot of Asian American actors who've been doing it for a lot longer, who have been hurt and who have been disrespected and treated unfairly. They were the pioneers to create the landscape that allowed someone like me to thrive. When I came onto the scene, diversity was something that was starting to become kind of a prerequisite for a lot of these things. And so when I came on the scene, what I noticed is that it was quite the opposite of being hard because I was different. However, I started to notice that I was being kind of auditioning for roles that had no substance, had no growth, had no context, but they were just Asian. So I came into the industry at a time of diversity. The problem then was that I feel great doing this, but I don't have any lines. I'm in every scene and I'm just there in the corner. And so that's when I started to see the difference between diversity and representation. I also came into an industry where I was a part of one of the biggest reintroductions of Asian representation. And to see the difference between that and the kind of the beginning of my career, I did notice that they're two different things. And so that was different. But I mean, overall, I think that it hasn't necessarily been hard, but I don't want to take jobs from people just because I'm Asian. I don't think that I do, but that's not right either, I guess.
How do you work against being kind of typecast, right, in those exclusively Asian roles? Like, how do you get beyond that? I mean, you certainly have been able to, but for those who are struggling to be able to be seen beyond a certain label, how would you suggest being able to do that?
Well, I mean, the only people that can answer that and do something about that are the people behind the scenes. Actors have no say. I mean, we can't blame any of the Asian American actors that came before us for the roles that they were given, because why weren't there any other roles for them? And so we need people behind the scenes that are writing authentic characters that don't typecast. I think there was something I saw on social media, like someone was doing a casting call and asked specifically for no monolids. When I was first coming up, there were instances where they want you to put on a Vietnamese accent, or do they want you to sound like this? And that more and more doesn't exist. I think right now people are aware that that's not the way to go. And I'm seeing characters that could have been written for a man, could have been written for any race of person. It's just a character. But then at the same time, the difficult thing with typecasting is that you want to also do movies that tell the stories of your community. There's some projects that I've done or that I'm kind of developing right now that it's like almost like I want to do it for the culture. I want to tell these stories. So it's almost like maybe I'm typecasting myself, but I'll just say no at that point if it's like that. And I think a lot of actors are starting to.
You're listening to a conversation between award-winning Asian American writer, actress, and comedian Awkwafina and Lisa Ling, the executive producer and host of CNN's This Is Life. We have some exciting updates about our annual fall conferences now in their second virtual year. First of all, registration is now open for the Texas Conference for Women. So get your tickets today and take advantage of early bird pricing. Also, mark your calendar because registration opens this week on Wednesday, May 19th for the Pennsylvania Conference for Women and in early June for the Massachusetts Conference for Women. Early bird pricing is in effect for about a month following the opening of registration. You can learn more about all of these events at conferencesforwomen.org. There you will also find show notes and a transcript for this and all episodes of Women Amplified. Now let's get back to the conversation.
Let's talk a bit about Nora from Queens, your show on Comedy Central. Why did you want to kind of bring your life story to the forefront?
I mean, well, it was the only story I had pretty much. I think that one thing that we need to do, especially when we talk about representation and Asian American media, we have to show Asian Americans the way that they are. Even if that means accidentally confirming some stereotypes, I wanted to make a show about specific place, which is Queens, which is the most diverse borough, the biggest borough in of all the five boroughs, and one that people really don't understand. The nature of it is different. And I wanted to portray a family that wasn't brainstormed. It was literally ripped from real life and the setup, everything. And it's almost like if it works, it works. And if it doesn't work, then maybe my life didn't work. You know what I mean? I wanted to show an Asian American experience that was true, that didn't have to check boxes. It just was what it was.
And what was it like for you to even step back and watch that? I mean, Nora from Queens is a show, right? It's a scripted show, but there's so many elements of your life that are the basis for the show. So given that you really struggled with a lot of things growing up, what was it like for you to kind of watch from the periphery a show about your life?
My harshest critic about my show. I mean, it's my life. So it's like, I'm never going to watch it and be like, oh, I killed it. Like, it's always going to be like, could have done that so much better. You know, a lot of regrets. But what I see, though, is something that I've never seen as just a consumer. First of all, like being able to work with BD Wong in that specific role. He plays my dad in a way that my dad can't even play my dad. And working with Lori, who has been acting for many, many, many years, starting with Madam Butterfly with BD. She's an OG. I've never met an Asian American woman from that generation. And to be around her was more than inspiring because the stories that she would tell, and also just to see a woman that dedicated her life to acting, an Asian American woman. So it's different than my family, but it almost is my family. And also I am reminded of a time where I had no idea what was going to come.
I want to pivot a little bit to these times that we are living through right now. We've just experienced perhaps the most consequential election of our lives. We are in the middle of a global pandemic, and there has been a lot of racial attacks, a lot of xenophobia directed toward Asian people because this virus reputedly started in China. How have you used your platform to speak out on issues like that and others? And how do you kind of view your platform given the fact that you have such a high profile as an actress?
First of all, with all of the xenophobia and the sudden slew of racist attacks against Asians, I mean, that was deeply disturbing. And instances that I even experienced, I think the first couple of weeks, I was yelled COVID, I was yelled chink. It happened to me. And obviously, it's founded in ignorance and stupidity. It's driven by hatred, misplaced hatred. And for me, I really don't think there's any room for it. I also know that in our country, we have a lot of issues with race. We have a lot of issues with groups that have been oppressed, murdered, abused for as long as our country's history. And at the same time, we then have these events that cause kind of this like spurt in just more ignorance. The way that I want to use my platform is obviously to not promote ignorance, right? Because the way that I responded honestly is that I was hurt by it. And I don't really know how to use my platform to be angry or aggressive if I'm just honestly just deeply saddened by it. And when I did realize how much it was affecting Chinatown, and especially given my family's history of Chinese restaurants in New York City, imagining my great grandma walking around Chinatown if she was still alive and getting like a soda bottle thrown at her by some racist idiot, my heart hurt. So I wanted to give back to the Chinatowns, and I just really hope that like we can gain some kind of form of understanding as a people, because we have a lot of problems right now.
You feel compelled to use your platform to speak out on things?
I do feel compelled to use my platform to speak out against what I consider injustice, for sure. I also am careful about how much I do talk about without knowing anything about the situation. So if I'm going to use my platform to spread information or to spread my opinion, I need to make sure that I know the situation like full over, because that's my responsibility. There are certain things that I think I don't feel comfortable talking about, for instance, like my private life I don't know a lot about politics in sense of like a global perspective also. And so I need to know those things before I use my platform. But obviously it is important to use your platform to help.
I certainly appreciate you doing so. Because I mean, there are things that to me are just no-brainers, right? Use your platform to speak out against hate and intolerance and bigotry and racism. And I so appreciate people like you and so many others who are continuing to do that, because there's a difference between what's right and what's wrong. And when you know it, you not speak out against injustice. I want to ask you about something. When I saw this on social media, I was just beside myself excited. And that is that you're going to be working on a series with Queen Sandra Oh.
Yes. Yes. A movie.
So I'm excited about that. Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh my God. So we got the script from Jen D'Angelo, who's this awesome writer. And Sandra was into it. I'm obsessed with Sandra Oh. I met her years ago at a Korean charity event. I was like emceeing it. She was like the guest of honor. And I remember walking in and I being like, she is so swag. This is the coolest woman I've ever seen in my life. She was so down. She came and said hi. And then years later, the cut to us talking about this movie, our first conversation lasted almost 2 hours. And for me, like just like Lori Tan Chin, it's like, I love having that support. Like I love being able to talk to her about being an Asian American woman in this industry, especially from her.
I'm beside myself about that.
You need to come do a cameo.
I would love that. I would love that. You can teach me how to exercise my acting skills. What is your hope, or what are your hopes for 2021?
I hope that as a nation, as a people, and even as a generation, we started to think outside of ourselves a little bit. And we also started to look into ourselves. I hope that we figured out what matters. I hope that a part of us became unselfish. I hope that a part of us gave up something for the greater good during this time. And I hope that when we come out of this, we are able to pick up the pieces.
Well, Nora, thank you for taking the time to be with all of us today. I just continue to watch you with awe, and I so appreciate you making all of us laugh. So thank you.
I love you, Lisa. I've been watching you forever. You're so cool. I can't believe that this is the second time I'm talking to you. I'm going to call my dad after this. As a matter of fact, I'm going to take a picture of this and I'm just going to send it to him. And he's going to be like, what? Because my dad has a crush on you. Anyway, no, it's all good. I love you, Lisa. You're the best.
We hope you enjoyed this very special episode featuring the 2020 Massachusetts keynote conversation between Awkwafina, creator of Nora from Queens, and Lisa Ling, the executive producer and host of CNN's This Is Life. If you enjoy this podcast, share it with others. We could all benefit from a little inspiration and good advice right about now. The Conferences for Women is the largest network of women's conferences in the nation. They draw more than 50,000 women and men to annual events in Boston, Philadelphia, Austin, and California. You can learn more at conferencesforwomen.org. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. Thank you so much for listening. Be kind and be well.